This important part of fertility can determine whether you conceive, whether you maintain the pregnancy and don't miscarry, and it can impact the health of your future baby from childhood through their adult life. It's the quality of your eggs. Eggs are the female equivalent of sperm in a man. Together, egg and sperm are what meet to create your baby, so they are pretty important. Today, we talk about them and how to improve your egg quality to improve fertility outcomes, as well as how to live in a healthy balance of optimal health and sustainability and joy along the fertility journey. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood. Empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about.
And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Okay, so fertility, this is your wheelhouse, Dr. Leah, and I am so grateful for it because everybody needs to have a little bit of help in this realm, and especially the way that the trends are going. So there's a couple of main areas or ways that we like to categorize infertility or issues with getting pregnant. So it's sometimes an ovulation issue. Is the woman even ovulating? Mm-hmm. Is she ovulating regularly, etc.? Then sometimes it's an egg quality or sperm quality issue. Sometimes it's a timing issue. There's a couple others. But so today we're going to talk about and deep dive into egg quality. So what does that even mean? What can we do about it? I feel like a lot of people maybe hear that term and they sort of have an idea of what it means, but it can be a really big deal, especially in more advanced maternal ages. And if there has been, like, you know, a big history of toxic exposures and different things in the woman's life. So you are an expert about this, and you're here to drop some knowledge and some really practical tips so that people can walk away and make some big changes and, you know, hopefully get that baby in their arms. So go ahead and take it off.
You're correct in that there are a couple, you know, root areas that we want to look at when someone's trying to become pregnant. And eggs are basically what a woman contributes to the baby, right? Your eggs are held in your ovaries, and the egg is what is ovulated, which can come in contact with a sperm, and that is what creates an embryo and then eventually a baby. So it contains the genetic material that will become your future children. And a lot of times when we are becoming pregnant, we don't think about our eggs or even our sperm very much, but their quality, meaning what they look like, the integrity of their shape and their DNA and the things that they're exposed to and the kind of nutrients that they've had, they all impact whether you can get pregnant or not, whether you have a miscarriage or not, and they impact the health of your baby. So just to paint the picture really quickly for some people, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with Down syndrome. Down syndrome is a genetic chromosomal imbalance that happens in a embryo before the baby's ever born. And it happens because there's an extra chromosome. A chromosome is a part of the DNA. And in egg and sperm, when they come together, they each bring half the chromosomes of your future baby. So half come from mom and half come from dad. And when you bring them together, which is conception, they blend them all together and then they become one whole being. And there should only be a specific amount of chromosomes, and those chromosomes should be healthy. That is the genetic code that says if you have brown hair or if you're super tall or if you have any genetic issues. So in Down syndrome, there's an extra chromosome. It could have come from mom. A lot of times it does, where she passes on an extra chromosome when there shouldn't be. And that results in Down syndrome. There are a lot of other chromosomal abnormalities that can occur with embryos that can make them not viable, basically meaning they don't survive. And this is a big reason why women have miscarriages. So when we talk about becoming pregnant, yes, you need to actually ovulate, which is pumping, like dumping out that egg, not dumping. That's not the right term. When it is burst out of the follicle, you know, that obviously has to happen to become pregnant. And then you obviously need sperm around, whether you're having sex and you conceive naturally, or if you're going through IUI or IVF, sperm need to be there. And then the egg, the health of that egg and the health of the sperm can dictate, again, whether you become pregnant in the first place, whether that embryo can grow and be healthy and actually implant in the uterine wall and grow and become a baby. And it also impacts the health of the baby itself. So when we talk about egg quality, we're talking about how do we optimize your genetics and the eggs that are going to become 50% of your baby. And it's the same thing when we talk about sperm. The eggs are just the female equivalent. The interesting thing is that we don't see eggs on the outside of our body
wild.
Like we do sperm. Sperm are...
Right.
It would be. Well, and we do with IVF, which is wild. But we don't naturally like see
quick,
our little egg
out.
Drop in the toilet. You know, when we, because one thing for women to know is whether you're trying to become pregnant or not, every month, if you're ovulating, you do lose an egg. So it becomes ovulated, it bursts out of your ovary, and it swirls around in your little fallopian tube, waiting to come in contact with a sperm. And if it doesn't, then the hormonal cascade happens where they're like, oh, there's no sperm here, there's no baby, let's shed our uterine lining and try again. And that's what a period is. But in that shedding, your egg is in there somewhere. We would never be able to see it. It's microscopic. But it is still there. So it is coming out of our body. We just can't study it like we can sperm. So in a way, sperm are much easier to see what's impacting them. And we can do really easy studies on men to say, oh, what happens when we put you in a sauna for, 3 months? Or what happens if we take away alcohol or give you a bunch of toxins? And we can see really easily what happens to sperm, which is why there's such amazing data on sperm health. Egg quality is a little harder to test, right? Because we don't
That's
have
a great point. I've never thought about
millions
that.
Of
like,
little eggs that we can
really,
look
what
at
do we
time.
Have? We have anti-Müllerian hormone and that's about it.
And that doesn't even tell us quality. So that's something we'll talk about. So let's just start there first of all, let me finish up why egg quality is important. So we've already said it's the genetics of your future baby. 50% of miscarriages happen because of chromosomal issues. So just like I shared with you, the DNA of the eggs, it can come from egg or sperm. However, the majority of the time, if a woman has a miscarriage, usually on the earlier side, is because of a chromosomal issue from egg or sperm quality problems. So if you want to have a baby, you obviously need that baby to survive. And that means you need good quality eggs. The other thing is, on top of getting pregnant, staying pregnant, like I mentioned, the health of your eggs actually impact the health of your future baby through what's called epigenetics. And this is essentially what is happening with your health. You are creating the environment that will become your baby's whole genetic makeup. And we're finding that when your children are little kids, when they grow up to be teenagers and adults, their risk factors for diseases and having certain things like cancers or heart disease can actually be impacted by your health that you had before you got pregnant with that baby, which is so mind-blowing and powerful. So we've talked about why it's important. How do you even assess egg quality? So like I said, with sperm, it's very easy. They just ejaculate,
Classic.
We look at the sperm, woohoo, we can like see what's going on. It's so easy. I know, of course, women are so complicated. So yeah, AMH is something you mentioned. It stands for anti-Müllerian hormone. That is a very popular test in the fertility world. But what it's actually testing is how many eggs you have, not their quality. So to talk about this conversation, we need to talk about the differences between those two words. Quality means what is it like? For instance, a good quality meal, is food that has been raised in a different way. It doesn't have fillers and toxins. It's not cheap. It's maybe more expensive. Like you can just see, or if you know,
a pair of jeans.
Like a good quality
yes.
leather purse, yeah, pair of jeans. I'm like, what is something that is where someone can or like, oh, what, the quality,
yeah,
like
something
more
that we
time
talk about
went
too
into
is
that.
The quality
it's not going to fall apart.
Is a supplement that is actually representative of what it says on the bottle, yeah, because of third party testing. It doesn't have heavy metals. It doesn't have fillers or gluten or shellfish or different things that are allergens for different people. It's using the proper forms of the vitamins and minerals. There's different things about it that are higher quality than if you go and you get sort of like a garbage supplement that is actually like a lot of just rice flour and then maybe almost no active ingredients of the vitamins and minerals that you were intending to get at all. It's a very low quality or poor quality item. And so we can think about egg quality in that sort of a way. Like maybe with an egg, it's easier to degrade. It doesn't have as much integrity in the cell wall. Also, one other thing that I just wanted to mention real quick is that there's a lot of evidence now that the eggs have play a role in choosing the sperm and that it's sort of like this dance sometimes, which is really cool. And I think about maybe like a higher quality egg being able to have a lot of intact, you know, the chemokine receptors, which is like the chemical receptors that it's talking to the sperm back and forth with, whereas potentially like a lower quality egg is not able to communicate or understand what the sperm are saying to it and maybe not choosing as well, or maybe not having as much of a barrier for them to burrow up against and different stuff like that. So that would be maybe how it would manifest, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And so just to paint the picture, to help paint this picture with sperm, when we look at count, the count is how many sperm are there. Like, is it a million? Is it 5 million? What is it, 50 million? But then the quality is, what do they look like? How are they swimming? Do they have two legs or two tails, two heads? Like, are they falling apart? That's the quality. For eggs, we have the same. We have a count, how many eggs are there? And then what's the quality? The quality is the thing that's much harder to test for. So count is quite easy to test for. That's what we do with AMH. That is a blood test that tells you how many eggs are there. What is your ovarian reserve? Basically, what is reserved in your ovaries? How many are there? We can also see that with what's called an antral follicle count. This is if you go to the doctor and they do an ultrasound and they actually count how many follicles you have in your ovaries. That will tell you how many there are. But it doesn't necessarily tell you the quality. You can have a lot of follicles and they all be poor quality and you could still be having miscarriage after miscarriage. So that's one thing to look at. There are some hormonal tests that you can do like FSH and estradiol. But again, a lot of them tell you how well your ovary is functioning, not necessarily the quality of the eggs. There is one test I like to do, which is progesterone. Mid-luteal phase progesterone. And this, I think, is a better indicator of your egg quality. It's not as commonly done in the conventional fertility world, but I'm going to just briefly tell you why it's important. So when you are maturing your eggs, when you're a baby, this is kind of mind-blowing, your eggs are created when you are in utero in your mother's womb. So by 20 weeks, a baby has her whole reproductive system.
It's kind of terrifying to think about.
By 20 weeks, like, in
terms
utero.
Of, it's beautiful, and it's like, wow, the pressure of, it's a beautiful pressure. We should feel it, and we should feel responsible for doing the best we can by our babies and our children, especially our daughters, in, you know, trying the best we can to be less toxic and do different things because it will impact her life.
The important thing, and what I want to bring hope to, is the way that eggs develop is they go through a couple different phases. That first phase happens when the baby's in utero. So you are impacted by some extent about what your mom's health was like. But then they stay arrested. Basically, they stay frozen in place all the way through puberty, all the way through adulthood. And by the time, so you have about 5 to 7 million eggs when you're a baby, about 1 to 2 million when you're born. And then that number kind of keeps going down. So by the time you go through puberty, there's around 300 to 500,000 eggs, but there's all those immature little eggs. And every month when you go to ovulate, the reason why you have a period is because you've ovulated. So every month when you go to ovulate, a group of them starts to go through a new phase of this development. They actually start about 3 to 4 months before you ovulate. And it's in that window of time, the 3 to 4 months before you ovulate, that the influence of your health, the things you're exposed to, the diet you have, the stress you have, that actually determines the second major part of development. That's when chromosomal abnormalities happen. that's when you, the window of influence on making a high or poor quality egg is really in your power. So even if you're older, every month or every 3 months before ovulation, you still have the chance to drastically improve the eggs that you have in your body. It's not that, you know, whatever you were exposed to, you know, years ago are going to impact every single egg necessarily.
It's kind of like,
so that's
yeah,
really
kind of
exciting.
Like the way I see it in my mind, just for somebody who maybe wants there. A metaphor or is visual, is like a car coming down an assembly line or something. You know, it takes time and it takes a while, but they have to start with some sort of rudimentary mm-hmm. structure. And that's like the eggs being recruited in this group. This like little cohort of eggs is going to be the ones, and the body will mature, the ovary mm-hmm. will mature them to a certain extent and then pick the one that's going to be like the queen, and she's the one that gets ovulated, and the others just degrade and go away. But it's like, okay, who's the yep. best of the best, like the Hunger Games or something, like mm-hmm. we're going to take this group and train you all up and we're going to see what or you know, we're going to make all these cars, we're going to start making them, and then whoever's going to be the best one's the one that we're going to send down the racetrack or something. And it, but like that time span for people to understand that it's a big impact. And what's cool about it too is that it is analogous to sperm, in that like when you're going to make changes to your sperm health, we say it's about a 3 month cycle where they're being recruited in the testes and starting to be mm-hmm. made. And so there's these big impacts that we can be making. So the very, very base minimum that we would say for preconception health is a 3 month. But ideally, it's like, you know, 6, 9, 12 months, mm-hmm. something like that. But at least 3 months. And that's cool that it's sort of similar, because I feel like people don't think about that necessarily.
Yeah, no, it's really important. And so why this ties back into progesterone is that when the eggs are maturing, the little immature oocytes, oocytes is a technical term for egg, they are held in a little house called a follicle. So imagine that they're like warm and cozy in their little follicle house. And that follicle has cells called granulosa cells. And they basically like feed the egg and nurture the egg. And they're like the messengers. They make hormones. They receive hormones. They're like a little nurse cell or a nanny cell for this little egg. They're doing all the things. And those granulosa cells in the follicle, they make estrogen. So when the way that ovulation works is that your brain sends a hormone called FSH to your ovaries and says, grow, follicles, grow. And the granulosa cells take in that FSH, and then they spit out estrogen. So they're making a hormone called estrogen. Eventually, if you have enough eggs, you will make enough estrogen that it will trigger another hormone in your brain called LH. So anyone who's doing ovulation test strips or trying to find out if you've ovulated by testing your LH strips, that's because once estrogen's high enough, it triggers LH, and that's what makes the one ovary or the one egg in the ovary burst out and ovulate. Once that happens, so all of these eggs have been maturing, one is chosen, it's ovulated. The outside, the follicle, the little nurse cells that have been taking care of that egg, they switch from making estrogen to now making progesterone. Progesterone, they're basically like, I'm going to nurture you little egg so that you're ready. And as soon as it bursts out, it like runs around and it's like, okay, now we need to create a little nest egg. It's like, I think of a really nurturing mother who spends her whole life, you know, building up this little child. And then as soon as you ovulate, it's like, you're sending him out to the world. Go find your partner, go find your husband. I'm going to get your house ready. So I'm going to, you know, go clean your house and get you new bedding and do all of these things. And so progesterone like keeps that uterine lining receptive so that once the egg and sperm meet, it can go implant and then stay there.
Progesterone
holds up the uterine lining like a dam.
Progestation is the hormone that, just so people, I love to draw that connection to people, and I know mm-hmm. we've said that on other episodes, but it is pro-gestation, mm-hmm. gestation meaning pregnancy. It's the hormone that's going to keep you pregnant.
Yes, it keeps you pregnant. So you've ovulated, the egg is going to meet the sperm. Now that hormone that keeps you pregnant, that allows the embryo to implant and then keep you pregnant, without miscarrying, is progesterone. It's very important. If you don't have enough progesterone, you will lose the baby. And so that corpus luteum, which is the outside of the egg, the follicle cells, those nurse granulosa cells, now are making progesterone. And so if you don't have enough progesterone, even if the egg and sperm met and an embryo was created, it will miscarry. You will start bleeding and you will lose the baby. This typically happens early, around 6 to 8 weeks time. the health of the follicle. Outside of the egg is in the follicle. Yeah. So it's held in the follicle.
Got it.
And once the egg is burst out of the follicle, the follicle itself, those are where the granulosa cells are, that is what makes your progesterone. So if you have poor quality follicles, poor quality eggs, because remember the egg is just held inside of it like a little shell. If you have poor quality eggs and follicles, then you're not going to be able to make enough progesterone. If you don't make enough progesterone, you can have a miscarriage. So outside of chromosomal issues, if you have poor quality eggs, then you will also have low progesterone because you maybe don't have the nutrients needed to make the progesterone, or you have a lot of toxins or inflammation or stress that is impacting the development of the eggs and follicles, meaning you don't have enough progesterone. So if you check your progesterone mid-luteal phase, basically a week after you ovulate, if you check that in a blood test, you can see kind of where your levels are, and if they're suboptimal.
Okay, so
me,
would
that
you say then that
that
would be more
quality.
Indicative of poor egg quality over other reasons why you might have low progesterone?
So there are a couple other reasons why you can have low progesterone. Most of the reasons why you can have low progesterone are also reasons that there are also things that impact egg quality. So for example, we know inflammation greatly decreases progesterone. Inflammation affects egg quality substantially. So it's like we know that these certain things decrease progesterone. We have no way to actually test
it's indicative of
a lot of these things are guessing. Yes, it's indicative of a poor quality. Like if you're if your nurse lady's not healthy, you know, if she's like coughing and spewing and like she's super healthy, most likely she's gonna like make the baby not very healthy, right? Like the health of the follicles and the eggs are tied together very great, much so. Yeah. So some of the things that impact egg quality are inflammation, as I already mentioned. So inflammation can come from poor quality diets. It can come from chronic infections. So let's say you have like a gut issue,
mold.
You have yeast or a parasite or bad bacteria in your gut, mold. Yep. If you have dental issues, like chronic dental infections can cause a lot of inflammation. One of the biggest things that impact egg quality are toxins. So toxins are in our environment. We make some toxins in our body, but the majority come from outside of us. They can be things from plastics like BPA or phthalates. BPA is found in plastic like hard water bottles. Phthalates come from soft plastics and also fragrance. So any of your products that have scents or that smell, you know, Glade air plugins and your laundry detergent and your shampoo and your perfume, they all have phthalates. Obviously, you can choose products without them, but the majority of products that are made and on the market have them. Heavy metals are other toxins. We have pesticides and herbicides on our food. There's VOCs, volatile organic chemicals from paints or new mattresses, flame retardants, sprayed on stuff. So there's a lot of toxins that we're exposed to. And the literature is overwhelming on sperm health. Because we can test them so easily, we know how much they impact them. And there is a large growing body of evidence to show that they are also impacting egg quality as well. And in the IVF world, it's a lot easier for us to study egg quality because we are actually extracting the eggs out of a woman's body. So the majority of the studies are done in the IVF in arena, right? Because we don't go to all of these women and poke needles into their bodies.
That's problematic, right? Because that's like a very
specific
population. It's just not indicative of like the whole total, but it is, I guess, a good thing that we have some level of data.
Yeah, so we have data where we didn't before is kind of what I'm sharing, where it's kind of a new pool of data because IVF is a newer kind of procedure in the last 30, 40, 50 years. So we are learning more and more, though, that toxins are hugely impactful, in particular BPA. So BPA is, like I said, the thing found in plastic water bottles, and phthalates. These two are very strongly linked to egg quality issues. Because imagine, you know, your cells, your eggs are going to recruit the nutrients that you have in your body, and they're going to be impacted by whatever soup they're in. So if you have a really healthy soup, then it's going to be a healthy baby and a healthy egg. If you have more of a toxic soup, they're going to be impacted by that, and it will impact the genetics, the DNA, chromosomes, and all of those things.
In a way, because those are areas, those are categories of toxins that are relatively easy to avoid. If we can move our food storage and water storage mm-hmm. into glass or metal, if we can buy products that don't have the fragrances and that are on the cleaner end, and that's, you know, all sorts of different things. And it takes a little while. So if you're new to this, you know, don't feel like you need to go throw out everything right now. But when you're going to buy a new bottle of something, choose something that doesn't have a fragrance. Or if it does, it's with essential oils, true, actual essential oils. But there are so many products on the market now. It's almost overwhelming. I can't even keep up, honestly. Like, there's so many new products that are coming out and brands, and people are constantly asking. I know mm-hmm. you have a lot of really good resources about this, particularly because people want to know, well, what do you use for the makeup and the shampoo and the body wash and all of this different stuff? And you know, do need to be thinking about all of this, just for not only for the health of your baby, but for your own health.
Yeah.
And women and breast cancer and all sorts of different stuff. Like, our bodies can only, I know I've mentioned this on another podcast episode before, but our livers do a really good job. They really do. Considering the constant insult and barrage of synthetic chemicals that, you know, we never developed or evolved with throughout time, that we are having to manage now on a daily basis, we do pretty well. But when there's little breaks in the system and things can kind of just cascade and snowball down, that's when we're seeing all this chronic illness and disease and infertility rates and issues. And then, you know, unfortunately now in IC pediatrics, and I've been speaking with a lot of colleagues lately, that the kids are sicker than ever. And I really didn't feel like it was going to be like this. I thought it was going to be pretty mm-hmm. easy, but I'm dealing with a lot of really complex and chronically ill children. And I have to think, like, a lot of these families are also doing really, really well by their children and trying super hard, but we just need to be diligent. I don't say this to give people anxiety, because the anxiety that you might have over having a completely toxin-free life is actually, in my opinion, probably more damaging in totality. So you have to sort of find the balance of, mm-hmm. okay, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to be good with this, you know, and really truly feel that way. Do not let it overstress you, because
yeah.
stress is inflammatory. Another one of those ones that you were saying, you were going to say.
Yes, we'll get into that. So yeah, basically, okay, yes, I have amazing resources at womanhoodwellness.com/courses. I have a whole course, a mini course on ditching the toxins, where I walk you step by step exactly how to do this so you don't feel overwhelmed. I have a free resource on all of my non-toxic favorite products at the womanhoodwellness.com/products. So you have a lot of support. And the thing that I want to highlight and what I teach in my egg quality course is your...
I love your metaphor like so much.
Game. So baby baking is like a video game.
Okay.
let's go there. Let's just go there. Okay. So basically, imagine that you are in a video game, and it's one of those old school video games where you have a jetpack on your back, and your whole goal to get to the baby is to get through 8 or 9 different levels, and you have to have enough energy and oomph to get there. And if you don't have the energy to jump to these next levels, you get stuck on a level. There are certain things that charge your battery. So imagine a cell phone. You use your cell phone throughout the day, and it's important, and in that process drains the battery, and so you recharge it. If you never recharged your battery, obviously you wouldn't have a very well-functioning cell phone. And you know how much use you can do versus how much you need to charge it. That's something that you learn with your cell phone. Fertility is the same. There are practices that we have in our life that charge up our battery. Things like sleeping well, eating a high quality diet, having joy in your life, taking time to rest,
nature.
Moving your body in a healthy way, you know, spending time in nature. Yeah. you know, having positive self-talk, taking potential extra supplements, things that actually boost your mitochondria and help to reduce all of these toxins. So those things build up your battery. There are other things that deplete the battery: toxins, not sleeping enough, being super stressed out, watching the news, consuming social media, saying yes to things when you mean no, you know, never taking time for yourself, never spending time in nature, you know, all of these other things. And so just like your cell phone, the goal is not to never use your cell phone and keep it plugged in on the charger and never use it. That's ridiculous. You need to use it. And we move through our life where we have things, right? We go out to restaurants and we're exposed to things. And sometimes you have to, you know, say yes sometimes when you don't mean it. But
the net
goal is that the net balance is that you're charge is always greater than depletion, that you always have more battery charge than depletion. And what I see, and this can be in all of the elements I've talked about, as well as energy. So when we talk about the energetics of fertility, like literally, are you eating enough, sleeping enough, and not doing so much that you have a surplus to give to another? If you do not have that extra surplus of energy and nutrients to give to another, your body is naturally going to block the fertility process. If you are so stressed out, you're not sleeping well, you're not eating well, and you're exhausted, your body is not going to say, wow, let's throw another being into the mix. It just knows, it's so intelligent, it knows that that's not appropriate. So in order to have a baby, you have to shift to have more charge than drain.
Yeah, it's not
perfection.
But the goal
is not,
you will never be
zero
there. Don't
drain,
even try.
Right? Yeah, it is not perfection, because the drive for perfection
there you go.
Is actually a battery drainer, because that actually drains you. So you hold in your mind as you walk through your day and say, have I done more things today that have charged my battery than drained them? And that at the end of the day is the goal. And a lot of times when we talk about the things that negatively impact fertility and egg quality, it's when you have an extreme situation. Even in the studies, it's only the women in the highest quartile, the highest like group. So if there's 100 women, it's only the top 20%, the ones that have the highest amount that actually had issues. Everyone else still had BPA in their system, but they didn't have any issues with their babies. So it's just the most extreme, because in that situation, their situation has tilted to be more depletion than charge. So the goal is not perfection. The goal is to optimize.
Love it.
With the idea of balance in mind always. So as I share these things with you, I want you to not take them and stress out. I want you to say, okay, you know, how do I walk through my life? I walk or I drink out of a water bottle that is stainless steel with a metal straw. And if I'm at the airport and I'm thirsty, I'm not even going to think twice about getting water and drinking it out of a plastic water bottle. Is it like not the best? Sure.
Totally.
But I'm not going to not drink water because it's in a plastic water bottle, because I know that the majority of the time,
80-20 rule, right?
90% of the time, I don't drink out of plastic. And yeah, the 80-20 rule, same with food. You know, I eat all organic whole foods as much as possible in my home. And when I go out to eat, I'm not going to be panicking that the food is not organic and that I'm not going to have a drink of alcohol, because the joy that I get from going out to eat with my friends, let's say, and having a drink maybe once or twice a month, that fills my battery way more than the drain of a few pesticide residues. So I'm telling you these things because they matter. Pesticides matter, plastic matters, these toxins matter. And how
and
live
I feel like our population,
life,
our audience too, is hip to a lot of this stuff. I know we're definitely going to have new people that are opening their eyes to all of these things, but I do feel like we have a lot of followers already that are doing and implementing a lot of these things. But I know also that some of them are being very extreme in, like, you know, what you're mentioning. And I just want everybody to take a deep breath and relax. And that, drive for absolute toxin-free perfection, like you were saying, is, I think it's, in, at least in the last couple of months for me personally, just watching people and watching families, and, you know, I'm treating children and I'm watching the parents of families and the way that they interact with the world and their children and their stress levels, I feel like is very directly correlated to how hard they are trying to keep everything completely toxic-free. Mm-hmm. Toxin-free. It's like I had a six-year-old the other day that had never, ever had refined sugar.
Yeah.
Never. And I'm like, I don't know if that's a benefit because I feel like the, you know, just as an example, the strictness there and all of the little micro interactions that have happened around birthday parties and not being able to participate and the isolation and the whatever, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know what? Just let them have a cupcake. It's okay. Even if there's blue food dye in the frosting, like once is not going to, they're not going to perish. You know what I mean? Like, we need to, and I know this is an example of, for children, but just to highlight again, the idea of relaxing into this, doing the best you can, and having a really strong mental, emotional connection with your food. The food you're putting in your body is nourishing you, and not constantly worrying and thinking about it. Because just like we know with that experiment with the Japanese doctor who speaks to the water, speaks to the one water bottle, very loving things, and speaks to the other water bottle with like very negative words and energy, that matters on a very cellular level. So we need to be eating and consuming our food, our supplements, our experiences, and really have super positive, this food is nourishing me, this food is bringing me health, and have that kind of an affirmation or mantra behind it. So anyway, that was just an aside, but I do see this like kind of toxic culture, not play on words, but you know, where people are starting to get like so worked up about mm-hmm. all these choices that I just think that it can do more damage than good. So I'm glad we discussed that because I think it needs to be said. We'll probably bring it up at some point in the future, but okay. So can you lead us through some of the things mm-hmm. that you find to be the most impactful that people can do to help improve their egg quality?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the end of the day, just like imagine this battery and the charge. The other thing that we want to think about is it's just a ratio. It is, a balance, a teeter-totter. Like in my head, there's, you know, the kid is up on the teeter-totter higher on the one side. So scale, yeah, sure. So with egg quality at the end of the day, just like the battery charge, that's really important because that ultimately brings in the energy and the nutrients you need. But the one of the most impactful thing are antioxidants. And what happens in the body is we need more healing than damage. It doesn't mean we're not going to ever have damage. In fact, the body is designed to work with oxidative damage. Oxidants are basically things that cause damage, okay? And they are needed. Like, for instance, exercise increases oxidation. It damages everything. When you go to exercise, your oxidative damage is like insane. It breaks down all of your muscles, all your cells are inflamed, like everything is happening. Yeah, and that's on purpose. That's important. The thing that is not ideal is if you have chronic oxidation and chronic inflammation that is happening all the time, because if you have that, most likely you can't combat it with antioxidants. So imagine that damage is happening, and then you have antioxidants that help to combat and calm them down. So imagine them like angry little things, and then the antioxidants come in and they soothe them and they're like, you're fine, you're fine. And so you need more antioxidants than oxidants in the system. So if you have a condition that is increasing oxidants, obviously that's problematic. It's going to tip your scale to be more on that side. So reducing that as much as possible is helpful, you know, getting inflammation under control, reducing your stress, reducing toxins. But on the flip side, doing all the things that build up your antioxidants is even more powerful. So antioxidants, for the most part, come from plants. Things like deeply colored berries and pomegranates and plums and pecans and walnuts and beans and all of these deeply colored fruits and vegetables have all of the antioxidants that you need. You might have heard of them from a supplemental form like vitamin C, vitamin E, quercetin. These are all antioxidants. They come from, you know, oranges and citrus fruits, and we often think about those as them. But one of the most powerful are the berries. And when you have a high amount of antioxidants, whether in food or supplement form, that helps to prevent the damage to your egg cells. And that is the same with sperm. Antioxidants are very important for sperm and egg health. And at the end of the day, your goal is to just have more antioxidants than oxidants. And that's sort of it. And then have more energy than depletion, which means sleeping, you know, going to bed on time. So some of my top tips are to go to bed a few hours before midnight. You get much more restful sleep. With eggs, you need melatonin. Melatonin is one of the most powerful antioxidants. And melatonin is your sleep hormone. You naturally make it when you go to sleep in the dark. If you're on your phone, your computer, or watching movies in your bedroom, it's going to block your melatonin. So get the screens out of your room, wear an eye mask or have blackout shades and go to bed, you know, 2 to 3 hours before midnight. It's the best to make boost your natural melatonin. Then making sure that you're eating throughout the day, balancing your blood sugar, making sure that you're bringing nourishment. All of your little egg cells, they need food and they need to have all of the nutrients that are required to grow. So focusing on whole foods as much as possible, but following an 80-20 rule, meaning 80% of the time you eat organic whole foods that are nutrient rich, meaning they are full of color. They come from a tree or the ground. They're in the produce section at the grocery store, eating really high quality proteins and fats. So good quality meats and lots of really beautiful fish like salmon and herring and mackerel that have omega-3 fats in them. So just nourishing your body as much as possible. Boosting your antioxidants with supplements. So there are a few things that you can take. Again, you can do a lot of these concentrated forms of berries, but things like CoQ10. CoQ10 is one of the top antioxidants for egg health. Things like PQQ and ALA and on top of antioxidants, we want to support our mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy powerhouses in the cells. So imagine that little battery. Those little batteries are in our cells, and they are the mitochondria. In order to support our mitochondria, we do all the things we've already talked about, but there's a couple other nutrients for them, like L-carnitine. L-carnitine is really helpful. A lot of the B vitamins that you get in a prenatal or a multivitamin, as well as in your food, things like vitamin B6, folate, zinc, these are all needed to boost your mitochondria. So at the end of the day, the goal is to just move through your life, reducing your stress, eating beautiful food, having nourishing food, being in nature, bringing more joy than stress. And what I really encourage people to do as they look through their day is take an honest calculation. You know, write down, what am I doing on a daily basis that charges my battery, that fills up my cup, that brings in nourishing, beautiful practices? And what is draining me? What's depleting me? If you write that down and you find that on the one, you know, battery boosting side is a much smaller list than on the draining side, then it's time to make some shifts. Because at the end of the day, if you have more positives than negatives, more charge than depletion,
and just going into motherhood too, like this is an opportunity in your life to get things really set. And I learned this from you, actually, that you were saying one of your goals, I don't know when we had this conversation, but was to teach women some of these lifelong habits so that they live through this in their preconception and fertility phases, so that it's such a habit that it continues on through postpartum and motherhood, which are, you know, so tough and time intensive, and, you know, everything just shifts once you have children. And so this now in a time period when you do not have children yet, or maybe you're experiencing like a secondary infertility or something, you do already have some children, but it is such an opportunity to really get your life on a better track. Yes, it's for the purpose of making a baby and having, you know, the state of fertility, which is optimal health, but it's also just for you, you know, for you to be able to go through your life more repleted than depleted, and how important that is going to be in your impact on your family. You know, the whole idea that the woman is the nervous system of the family, and if she is constantly depleted now going into motherhood, like, ain't nobody going to be happy. Like, this is not a good thing. We need to be figuring it out. And of course, there's going to be waxes and wanes. There's going to be different, you know, time periods where things might suffer a little bit, that they'll come back, and we need to have that ebb and flow. Another thing I wanted to mention that you like to talk about specifically is the energetics of like being receiving and receiving of help and food and energy and love in the time periods of, and how that can just as an energetic boost to egg quality and fertility in general, how can you maybe bring more receiving into your life, whether that's help, you know, somebody's offering to make you a meal, like, say yes, don't say no.
Because think about it again, I'm not a gamer, but like the video game thing is just so, and like the battery thing, in order for your phone to take in charge, it must receive electricity. It can only charge up its battery by receiving. Then it will do work for you. It will give you video streaming. It will give you, you know, the news. It will give you the phone, you know, text messages. That's the masculine, the giver. The masculine drains our fertile battery. Okay. So when you wake up and you are constantly giving and constantly going and doing and having schedules and deadlines and constantly, you know, being at the whim of everyone else around you and giving, 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 that's masculine energy, and that drains the fertile battery. Receiving builds up the fertile battery. That means receiving food support, receiving the love from nature, receiving, you know, just time by yourself, receiving proper nutrients, receiving rest. The receiving energy is the fertile energy, and that is the only way that you can build up your battery. And so, yes, I see it all the time in my practice and in my patients, and especially in the IVF world, because a lot of people are having infertility, but also there tends to be, what I have observed is a lot of masculine energy there, where there is very little receiving and very little battery buildup. And it is impossible to have a baby that way, even if you go through IVF and bypass all of the physical, you know, attributes, your being still has to be in the receiving mode for the embryo to transfer, for you to grow a baby. And when you think about this video game, your little jetpack has about 8 levels, and they go from hormonal balance, egg quality, the rapid growth of early pregnancy, the marathon growth of pregnancy, birth energy, nourishment postpartum, and then rebalancing after pregnancy or after postpartum. You need to have a battery charge at all stations. And the practices that you bring into your life now, the most intense energy time a lot of times is getting to that hump to getting into baby in your body. It takes an insane amount of energy, an insane amount of concentrated
resources,
like receiving energy. Yes, because once someone becomes pregnant, you will suffer if your battery is drained, mm-hmm. but a lot of times the baby will keep growing, you know, even if you're maybe not eating as well or sleeping as well. But if you're doing that in the fertility space, it's very challenging for it to happen. So make the shifts now, but work, like move through your life and say, what battery boosting thing can I do today?
I love it.
And at the end of the day, that's the
formula.
Thank
you so much.
That
was such a great way to think about something that is more than just supplements and more than just what do I do and what do I not do. It's a philosophical perspective shift, a paradigm shift of your whole life. And I think that is what is needed, because we're thinking about things in these little parts, and really it's a whole mm-hmm. bigger picture. And so that was really beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Leah.
If you guys feel overwhelmed, where you're like, you're saying all of these floofy things, but what do I actually do, if you're an action step person, I have courses and resources on all the different parts and pieces of this for you guys. So if you check out womanhoodwellness.com/courses, they're all there. So you can customize, build your own kind of support for yourself, because I understand that there's practical things that you want to learn how to do within all of these categories.
Check them out. You're the expert. I love
it. Head over there to get support.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.
Please remember that the ideas and views presented in this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. Now go have a wonderful day. You've got this.